vulnerability is a superpower, because it's where the magic happens, you know? When you're willing to step outside of your comfort zone and do things that will inspire others or give others a voice or make you relatable to other people who may not have the courage to really step out of that, you know, whatever box that they may be, we'll say, dwelling in the moment, just because of, you know, whatever parts of them don't give them that freedom.
Hello, Jalon.
Hi, Natalie.
I'm so grateful that we're able to sit here together and connect in this moment right now. We've had some previous connections before. Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you for inviting me. It never ceases to amaze me that I think so many doors open for me just because I decided to be vulnerable. And, you know, I think about what I've done and the opportunities that I've had because of that. And, you know, I have a saying that I feel like vulnerability is a superpower, because it's where the magic happens. You know, when you're willing to step outside of your comfort zone and do things that will inspire others or give others a voice or make you relatable to other people who may not have the courage to really step out of that, you know, whatever box that they may be, we'll say, dwelling in the moment, just because of, you know, whatever parts of them don't give them that freedom, a lot of things can happen. I mean, you reached out to me because you saw what I was doing.
That's right.
And I was just like, wow, you know? So it just gives me a feeling of accomplishment, because there were so many things that I wanted to do that I don't know if saying I knew how is proper, but when I just decided to do it, like, everything just kind of fell into place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And thank you for sharing that in terms of connecting with your vulnerability and how you feel like it's been a gift. Mm-hmm. Is kind of the word that just came to me as you were sharing that, is that it's been a gift. And I can definitely, yeah, relate to kind of understanding first, would you say, like, the parts of us that maybe are hesitant to be vulnerable or that are fearful of expressing that vulnerability for, you know, good reasons, right? And maybe some reasons that are historical and even reasons that are ancestral, and then getting to know those parts and to better understand. And then when there is a softening there, and then we can express that vulnerability, how, like you said, it can just put you in connection and put you in some of these situations that maybe you never thought you'd be in.
Right. Yeah. When I think about, like, my protectors and getting to know them and listening to them, you know, I always think about this one example of, like, a child who comes home from school and is super excited to show their parents or their mom or their dad, you know, their artwork that they may have drawn in, you know, kindergarten or first grade. And the parent is busy and they, you know, they say, not right now, not right now. I'm busy. And they almost get scolded for wanting to share. You learn not to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because in doing so, you get rejected or you get scolded. And that can happen at a very young age. You know, so we can have protectors that develop when we're tiny children and are with us, you know, our entire life, until we kind of understand what it means to have protector parts, or what it means to, you know, have a nervous system activation surrounding being open or being vulnerable. And to get to a point where you can understand, like, the biology of how trauma works in your inner world or your system, it can be very enlightening.
Yeah. And very empowering, I find it to be, that when we can have that clarity,
yes,
that it's like through the clarity comes sometimes that, yeah, that freedom and that softening. And you mentioned that, yeah, I reached out to you, and I did want to share that with the listeners in terms of how we got connected. And I was thinking back on it and I was like, am I remembering this correctly? But I'm pretty sure it was, yeah, I found your podcast. And then I started following you on Instagram, and then yeah, I just felt called towards, like there was just something that was like my intuition was just kind of speaking, and it was like, you need to contact Jalan. And I DM'd you, right? I DM'd you on Instagram, and I'm so, yeah, I'm just so grateful that I did, because I've really appreciated our conversations thus far, hence why I'm so excited to introduce you to the listeners on my podcast.
Likewise, I remember you asked me, do I know who you are? And I was like, of course I know who you are. Like, what are you doing writing me? And that was a part of me that didn't feel like, I was worthy of being asked to, connect with you or what have you. But like I said, when you're willing to step outside of your comfort zone and have that vulnerability and do things that other people can see and maybe be inspired by, things happen. So here
Yeah. Yeah, here we are.
we are.
And I want to dive in, and I want to ask you to share, little maybe some information about who are you? What would you like the listeners to know about you?
Well, I just turned 46, so I'm getting close to middle age. But
Nice.
who am I? I'm a firefighter, paramedic. That is what I do for career. I also dabble in real estate investing. I love Philadelphia Eagles. That's where I'm from, hence the jersey. And that was important to me also to be authentic. And that's why on my podcast I wear a jersey every episode, because it's who I am, and I didn't want to change anything about me. It was important to present myself as close to who I feel I am, and then to also be doing something that is very different, in that, I interview therapists and talk about hard things and talk about emotional and mental health and trauma and, all the things that are important because of maybe conversations that people didn't have, or just, not having a window into the world of healing. Because of, I do feel that a lot of people want to dive into this, but there may be some hesitation or reluctance to do it because of, cultural stigmas or just fear. Or even family dynamics of, we don't talk about those things, we sweep them under the rug, and so many different things. But I grew up in a family system that was just inundated with trauma. Both of my parents grew up during the civil rights era. So, for, a man, a black man, to have to deal with being disempowered during that time, and then for my mom to have to grow up, in a household to where by the time she was eight, she was basically the parent because her mom was so busy. All of that was something that was passed on to me. And they did an amazing job. But there was also a lot of deficiencies, and it wasn't because they weren't trying. It was just because they didn't have a lot of tools. So when I got to a point to where I was an adult, I started seeing things that just left me at a loss in a lot of ways. I was grossly emotionally immature. I had an inability to communicate well. I couldn't express my feelings. I didn't even know how to feel my feelings. I was coping and didn't know it. I was just in survival mode. And it just got to a point to where I knew I needed to do something. And I was always somewhat vulnerable. Like, I would always write these things, and I wasn't scared of posting them and sharing them with people. And a lot of people would tell me, you need to write a book, or thank you for this or thank you for that. But I wasn't really going deep enough. It was almost as if I was trying to prove to the world that I was okay, but I wasn't, by any means. And I didn't know how to get better or how to fix it. And then after George Floyd died, it literally broke me open. I didn't realize how much racial trauma I had experienced and how much I was carrying from it. And after his death, I couldn't stop crying. for weeks. I was just crying. I was mourning, and you know, I was mourning the effects of what it was like to be or to deal with the effects of racial trauma. And you know, once I learned about like epigenetics and how we can carry burdens from our ancestors, you know, I realized a lot of the stuff that I was feeling didn't feel like it was mine. But then also I did have my experiences as well. So I feel like I got to a point to where maybe I was the first one in my lineage to have enough space emotionally to process all the things that were happening. And it just came out. Like everything came out. And that's when I knew. I said, you know, I'm not well. I need to start therapy. And I had gotten a lot of encouragement to start therapy as well because of how willing I was to be vulnerable and some of the things that I had written and shared. You know, people had told me you're a therapist's dream. But I was just scared. You know, I didn't know what it was going to be like to actually talk to someone. I felt like, you know, if I had shared all the things about me, let the therapist run. You know, I felt like anybody who would hear these things about me would think that I was a bad person. You know, just all the things, all the fears that we have when we have to tell someone like who we really are and be vulnerable. And I call it getting naked emotionally.
Thank you for sharing that. I mean, and I'm curious, because that was a question in the back of my mind as you were just sharing all of that was, then was therapy, I guess, the next step for you in
It
this
was.
journey? Okay. You mentioned parts of you, it sounds like, that had some fears and hesitations around starting that process of, I'm assuming, like finding a therapist. Even I always say to people, I'm like, congratulations, you made it here in the first session. Because it's like just getting here, getting to the point where you are with a therapist or a healer of some kind is, I'm not gonna say like that's the hardest part, because I think facing the things that we're meant to face sometimes, like that can be hard. But getting to that point where you're actually connected with someone and you are there, either online or sitting in someone's office, you did it. You did that big step. And so I'm curious, when you started therapy, was it with specifically an IFS therapist? Where did
No.
IFS, I guess, come into play?
So I started therapy, just talk therapy, and about a year and a half, 2 years. And I had also done some hypnotherapy as well, about 3 or 4 sessions. But I got to a point where I feel like I had gotten all I was going to get from talk therapy. And my therapist knew it. She told me, you know, she fired me. Like one of our last sessions, she was like, "You're wasting my time. You know, you all at this point, we're just talking because you've done." You know, I just think I had gotten all I could out of that therapeutic relationship. And it wasn't that, you know, she wasn't a good therapist, because a great therapist will tell you, I don't want to see you long term. My job is to help you deal with the things that you're struggling with and, you know, send you on your way. And the funny thing is that it took me about a year to really open up with my therapist. And I love her to death. I call her home. Because if I'm struggling, even now, you know, having delved into other modalities, she is where I go if I have something big. And it may be 1 or 2 sessions, and then, you know, I'm back on my way, but she's my home base. And about a year in with her, we started a session, and I said, "Okay, I need to tell you something." I said, "I have still yet to be honest. Like, and I haven't gotten to a point to where I feel as though I can really be me, because I was afraid that you wouldn't want to be my therapist anymore, or that you wouldn't like me." Because for me, it was very important to be liked. And that's how I grew up. That was how I received love. As long as you liked me, I knew you would love me. And if my behavior or my personality or something about me would deter you from liking me, then in my mind, you would no longer love me. So I was essentially performing for a good part of my life to ensure that people would stay in my life. And when I told her that, she just laughed and she was like, finally. And I said, finally what? And she was like, I've been waiting, but I didn't want to tell you. You have to do it on your own. And she told me it's not my job to be your friend. So whether or not you wanted to get to this point or not, it was up to you. But she said, in order for me to be objective and, not have any bias in your treatment, I have to be, your therapist and not your friend. Like I have to wear my therapist hat, always. And that was kind of a big breakthrough for me because my nervous system was able to relax. And I knew at that point that I could just be me and that she was still going to be there. And then we kind of took off after that point. I think that was when, I finally understood that it's okay to just be me. And that, if I don't receive love for being me, then the love that I re was receiving probably wasn't genuine anyway.
And what you just described, it makes so much sense, that it just sounds kind of like your system at some point was able to feel a level of safety and comfort with her to then be able to express, like you were saying, what was really there, and to just have that acknowledgement of and that clarity of, yeah, these parts of me have been keeping this hidden for fear that if I show them to you, you won't like me. You'll leave,
Right, exactly.
And it sounds like kind of like you brought up in the very beginning of our conversation, that vulnerability then opened another door.
Indeed. So I probably saw her for another 6 months, 8 months, and then we started to kind of just talk, and we both kind of felt it that like we may be done here, and I was like, what do I do now? Because I always refer to her as giving me a pair of brand new shoes that I needed to go and break in the world. And, I had to do some walking on my own. But also I felt like there was more. Like I just was hungry for more. And that's kind of where IFS came in because at this point I was already kind of writing deeper things since I had, had done some emotional healing. And I would share them on Instagram, and then I would share them with therapists, like therapists that I would follow, and I would get a lot of good responses. And that was how I started the podcast as well. But more importantly, a couple of people said to me, "Well, have you heard of IFS?" I said, "What is IFS?" And I kind of started to look into it a little bit, but I was still kind of hesitant because now I have to go through the whole process of finding another therapist and opening it up to someone else. And I felt like, there were parts of me that started surfacing saying, oh, we don't need to do that. We've done enough. We're good where we are. But then I had this burning desire in my soul to keep going, and I could not ignore it. So I started interviewing therapists. I went on Psychology Today. And I just started sending out emails, and the emails were, this is who I am, this is what I'm looking for. I would love to have a consultation and see if we're a good match. And that happened about 30 times. And they would call, we would talk, and I would say, thank you for your time, but I don't think we're a good fit. And to be able to do that, I was like, wow, who do I think I am?
No, that's
like telling,
great.
I was at a point where, I had confidence in the work that I had done, and I wasn't willing to accept something that didn't feel right just to do it. And then I found Vanessa, and our first conversation was about 30 minutes long. And when we were finishing up the call, we both acknowledged that we were both who we were looking for. It was great. I cried. She cried.
That's so
For that to
beautiful.
happen in the consultation, I was like, wow, this is going to be great. And it was
Yeah.
our third session. I felt like I was flying. And I just took off. I started having a better understanding of what internal family systems was, how it worked. I met a part that I had a people pleaser part that was probably my most prominent at the time. And I met that part and I had an opportunity to, sit with it and give it a voice and see what it needed. And I was able to allow it to retire and not be so controlled by it anymore. But I mean, for that to happen in three sessions, to get one of those big parts unburdened, it was pretty life-changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so just beautiful that number one, that you gave yourself like the permission to know that it's okay to interview as many people as you want and to be like, no, thank you. And to know that like that's okay. And then to find your therapist and to have that connection and like you're saying, to be able to have that feeling of flying in your third session and connecting with that people pleaser part. And that's great. That's a great feeling.
It did feel weird, like telling therapists, no, thank you. Because I felt like these are professionals and I'm looking for help from them. And it just felt off saying no. And that's because I've been a people pleaser for so long. So to be in a position to where I was saying no, it was empowering. And I got what I needed because I didn't settle. I mean, I guess everybody's journey is their own, but for me, it was kind of like walking up a ladder, and talk therapy was that first rung for me. And then IFS, IFS is just magical to me. I think Richard Schwartz is an emotional prophet. It just is everything. I don't know how to stress that enough, but it is the modality for me that feels like where healing stops and starts. Like it encompasses almost everything. I mean, I know there's probably other things that can be done to go to different heights and different places, but I feel like IFS is enough for someone to be able to unburden the parts of them that are stuck in whatever traumas or like, I mean, because I feel my nervous system relax every time a part is unburdened. And if you can heal your nervous system while you're, in therapy as well, like, because to me, those are two different things. And for those two things to happen in one modality is just huge, in my
Yeah,
opinion.
absolutely. I agree. And so I guess now, is it okay then to get to the podcast? So you were
Sure.
working with your IFS therapist, and then where does the podcast start and begin? What was your process there? The inspiration? Yeah, I'm just so curious.
All I talked about was therapy and trauma and healing, and people were getting sick of me because it was literally like I had no balance. It was just, I was talking about this, a childhood trauma, this, and it, I guess it wasn't proper all the time, but I didn't know how, because it was like I found this treasure and I wanted to share it with everyone. And people would say, oh man, I'm getting sick of it. We can't even just have a normal conversation, or we can't just watch the game, or we can't just whatever. But then other people would pull me aside and be like, so what was it that you were talking about? Because it piqued their interest. Because we all have things that we need healing, and if there's someone who's providing an outlet or, talking about something that, may resonate with you, of course you want to know more about it. And I said, okay, well, what would be a good way for me to be able to talk about these things, but in a way that would give it credibility? And I was like, I'm gonna start a podcast. And I sat with it for probably 3 or 4 months because I knew I wanted to do it. I just didn't know how. So then I started reaching out to more and more therapists on Instagram, and I was sharing the things that I was writing to kind of get like a foot in the door. And then a few were like, "Man, this is good. Like, would you allow me to use this in my practice?" It's like, "What? Of course." And then I said, "Okay, well, let's make a deal. I'll let you use this if you let me interview you for like, 10 or 15 minutes just to talk about like what therapy is." And that's kind of how the podcast started. And I think now I'm at like 92 episodes, and I started in December of 2023. I did two episodes a week for a
Yeah,
year.
I don't know how you were doing
It
that.
became a full-time job, but I was just, I was so passionate about having any and every topic. Like I just wanted content so that if somebody found my podcast, they could anything that they may have been suffering from, they could just scroll through and find it, and it would give them an opportunity to have a window into therapy or what it's like to have a conversation with a therapist, but not from the perspective of like two professionals talking or two therapists talking, but just, a regular dude talking to a therapist
Yeah.
about difficult things.
I love it. It's so great. And I just listened to your most recent episode with Dr. Stephen Porges on
Oof.
polyvagal theory. I was so excited.
Wow.
I was like listening to it as I was on my drive. I was driving out of town over the weekend and I was just like, oh, this is great. So, yeah, thank you for having him on. That was
And
wonderful.
so I have dialed it back to now I'm only doing one episode a month. And I said, okay, I have a ton of content. I said, now I want to go after like some big fish.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to write someone like Dr. Porges because you have to go through assistants and secretaries and all that. So I said, okay, how do I get directly to him? So I wrote a letter and mailed it to his house.
Oh, you
And
did? Oh my gosh.
he responded to me and told his assistant to set up the interview.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I just like love that image of you like writing a letter and mailing it snail mail, to his place. Wow. And it worked.
It worked. And then thanks to you, my next episode is with Richard Schwartz.
Yeah,
And
that's so
that is
exciting.
so huge for me. Yeah. I've been working on the outline for a couple of months now, but I'm trying to make it. Well, my next episode is going to be a Dr. Lindsay Gibson that comes out on March 15th. She's the author of Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents.
That's right. Yeah.
That book is incredible.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And yeah, so it sounds like now, like you just said, you want to take some time to put out one episode a month and
Yeah.
maybe reach out to these individuals that are pretty major.
Well, I
And
got
that,
you in there as well, so.
oh, well, you're
No
sweet. Thank you.
problem.
So you shared a piece of your writing that was a letter specifically to your younger self, and you wrote this in 2022. Is that correct? Okay. And you called it Note to Self. And we talked before this interview, and you had mentioned that you would like to read that letter right now.
Sure.
And I'd love to invite you to read that letter.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. So I wrote this after, like we mentioned, doing some therapy and a couple of sessions of hypnotherapy that were specific to inner child work. And it just kind of happened on its own. It just flowed. So yeah, I'd love to read it. So here we go. There are things at times too difficult to touch. So deep that once unearthed, complacency is no longer an option. Healing deep hurt is often something we tend to shy away from. The uncomfortableness associated with growth and awareness can be so unnerving that most times it's avoided at all costs. I'm learning that avoiding it serves no purpose and more than anything prevents becoming whole and, more importantly, becoming one's true self. I'm no guru, and at this point, I don't feel like I know anything, but I started my journey. Anyone who's doing the work can attest to inner child trauma as a big one. I know it was for me, at least. The health of the little person inside of all of us can play a huge role in the development of the bigger person. The things we do and who will become or have become as an adult, a lot of times are directly related to our inner little person. I started down the road of allowing inner little me to heal, and I wrote him. I decided to share it because of the response I got from the people I shared it with, and if it will give someone else a jump start into giving themselves the gift of therapy, I'd be happy to serve as that bridge. I titled it Note to Self. Hey, Lonnie, it's me, you. The things I need to tell you, I'm hoping will allow for the both of us to get to a much better place. A place of true healing, self-love, and most importantly, peace. I never knew just how important this letter was until recently. I could have probably saved us both a lot of heartache had I had this awareness earlier, but you can't know what you don't know. I don't by any means want to say that I'm fully aware of all the things, but I'm learning. I can't speak for everyone, however, I know that from my dealings and experience that not a lot of people get to this place. Maybe I should say not a lot of people from where I'm from or that I've known that came up before me or that came up with me. Our parents, their friends, they're good people, and they did the very best they could with what they had, but you can't teach what you don't know. And they didn't mean to, but unfortunately, they damaged you deeply. They damaged you by forcing you to believe antiquated, impractical, tradition-based, and quite frankly, ignorant thinking rooted in appearances and trivial things that at the end of the day have no real value. Please keep in the forefront of your mind that they loved you very much and that they did their very best based on what they knew and what they value to be important. And as we take this journey together, remembering that will allow you to make peace with so many things that may be unsettling. First of all, I want to tell you that you are a beautiful boy who deserves so much love, affection, happiness, joy, a voice, and what I can say I think is most important, a true sense of self-worth. Somewhere along the way, you lost your sense of self-worth, little guy, but I'm here to let you know that you're okay. And that I'm going to take care of you, protect you, and love you so much. Mommy and Daddy loved you. There was nothing you did or didn't do that could have changed their outcome. It is not your fault. As we got older, we gained so much insight into life, love, and the trials and tribulations of being an adult. I know the pain you felt when Mommy and Daddy separated was something you never processed. It was a pain a little heart should never have to feel or endure. And you held it in as much as you could because you wanted to be a big boy. Thank you for being so brave. I feel it every day. You passed it on to me, and as much as it hurts me, as big as we are now, I can't imagine what it did to you. Well, if who I am now is any reflection of what it did to you, then I can't imagine what it did because I live it. I live it in that I've become grossly codependent. I've developed an inability to process or respond to love. And at times it feels like my adult brain is sick. Even still, we've done so many things, and I hope that I met or came close to the dreams and aspirations you had. I think that because you didn't have a chance to be a normal little boy and were carrying so much hurt, I had to work so much harder at so many things to try to find you and tell you that everything is okay. But I've done a lot. I think we could have never dreamed of all the things I'd accomplished because of you. You made me such a fighter and a go-getter. Something I've noticed lately is that although you're my inspiration, my accomplishments are dry and lack real depth of meaning. There's actually a lot of things now that lack real meaning and give true contentment. It all seems like meaningless check marks at this point. Based on the professionals I've spoken to and the things I've learned, I think it's because you were never validated and given permission to be okay. Unbeknownst to me, because that never happened, I've never known that I'm okay or that there's not something wrong deep inside of me. I've been floundering looking for anything and everything to fill that void, relying on others to prove to me that I'm worthy and clinging on to everyone who gives me a feeling of worth for dear life. I know now that without taking care of you, I will never be able to take care of me. You are and have been the missing piece of the puzzle to us. We love deeply, we feel deeply, but there is a gaping hole of insecurity that prevents us from breaking open to be our complete and true self. So, with all the growth I've experienced, I've come to the conclusion that I needed to go deeper. Deep enough to get to you, the little person inside of me whose brief life experience shaped my now. To give you an opportunity to let out all the emotions, fears, rejections, etc., that you had to hold in so that we can get to the point of truth and uncompromising honesty. I've realized that who I am now is so terribly and painfully riddled with your hurt. The coping mechanisms I've had to develop because of what you went through have drained me. I will do anything to prevent us from hurting and having to feel one more ounce of pain, but it's usually at my own or someone else's expense. I don't want to cope anymore, hurt anymore, or cause anyone else pain anymore. I need to be released, free to fly uninhibited, and the only way I can do that is to free you. I can't function with your underdeveloped emotional state just as much as you couldn't function having to deal with grown-up hurt and pain that was too much for you. It's time for us to come together, grow together, and heal together. I need you to know that you are okay. You are worthy of love. You deserve. You are important. You have value. There is nothing wrong with you. You did your best, the very best you knew how. You are not the things you've done wrong. You don't owe anyone anything. Most importantly, I accept you and will never turn my back on you. The challenge I face now is accepting these things for myself because I don't believe them just yet. I know that I am a lot of things and can grow and deconstruct to be even more things. But for now, I want this to be your moment. Please allow these words to sink deeply into your little heart and give you peace so that I can begin to do the same. If loving you means loving me, which in turn gives us peace and sets us free, then I want us to be free. From me to you to us, I love you.
Thank you so much for reading that out loud and for
Welcome.
sharing that vulnerability.
Very welcome.
I'm curious, what are you noticing right now as you just read that? I guess, yeah, what are you noticing within yourself now?
Was a lot. I can't believe I wrote that, number one. And it's been a couple of years. And to see, I guess, the growth that I've had since then is pretty pretty big. I know that when I wrote that, I was in a lot of pain. I grieved for weeks after I wrote that because all of the emotion was coming out. I was very unsettled. But I think it was necessary because to acknowledge the fact that my little guy, had some bruises was big in allowing for me to get past those things. Not that they didn't happen, but acknowledging them and trying to work through them was, I think, maybe the biggest thing for me. And also sharing it because I think having the courage to share that was saying to the world, hey, look, like the person you may know me to be, that person may be who you know, but there's also another version of me, and it's this version.
Yeah.
And this is the version that I'm most willing to share at this point because I want to get better. I want to heal. And if this, if you read this and you relate to it, then, maybe you could do the same thing.
Yeah. And again, just the way that you write is so beautiful. And I think I said
Thank
this
you.
to you in our first conversation together, where I was like, you should write a book. And yeah, you're writing so beautiful. And, the way you describe your little one, and you're also bringing acknowledgement to the protector parts that are in connection with him. And it's just so beautiful to hear that, where we can, as the listener, as the reader, I was closing my eyes as you were reading that out loud, because I'm more visual when I close my eyes in terms of in my imagination. And as you were reading, I could just see, kind of these images of this younger part and what he was carrying in terms of that unworthiness, and how then that was connected with these protector parts that you mentioned in terms of codependency and There was another one that you mentioned that I had written down, the fighter, the go-getter. And acknowledging that those protectors had to be doing all of that at that point in your life in order to help you as the system not feel that unworthiness, but to feel worthy.
Right.
But you mentioned in that piece also, though, you got to a point where you started to realize that those ways of being, those coping tools, those protector energy was maybe exhausting.
Right.
And yeah, maybe having a negative impact.
Well, because when they developed, I needed them.
Right.
But I don't need them now. You know, and they're like fighter jets scrambling to go find this threat when there isn't one.
Right.
And that takes a lot of resources, that takes a lot of energy. And I was just tired, constantly tired. Like there was a part of me that knew I didn't need to do any of this. But that part was suppressed by my protectors because they're trying to keep me safe. You know, it just got to a point where, and I didn't know anything about IFS at the time when I wrote that. Nothing
Really?
at all. Nothing
Oh
at
my
all.
gosh, that's amazing.
Nothing at all. So now to read that, I'm just like, oh wow. Like I'm gonna have to sit with that later and figure out who was who, and why I was doing those things. But I think a lot of what helped me to write that at the time was that I realized, you know, my parents in doing their best also had me living based on their life experience.
Right.
And that didn't apply to me either. Like I made some notes when I was thinking about our interview of, you know, what things I could talk about or regarding, you know, my caregivers. And one of them was that no one was willing to be honest. And to me, a lie is a lie regardless of intentions. And when individuals who have no capacity to feel are challenged, they oftentimes use their authority to avoid accountability. And I think for me, one of the biggest things with dealing with emotionally immature adults without a lot of knowledge of much of anything other than how to survive having unchallenged authority. Because that can put you in a very difficult situation. Because if they don't really, and I would say this to my mom, you want me to live as though I'm coming up in the same time frame as you. And a lot of the things that you're telling me to do don't work now. But if she's the parent and she, you know, has authority and control over me, it's well, do what I say. And that you know, that doesn't really work for progression. That's how people stay stagnant. You know, if she's fearful of something because of an experience that she had, and now I have to abide by the rules of her fear based on her experience, that's going to set me up for failure in my experience.
Right. And it might not make sense to you and your system, right? That
Right.
it's that maybe that's been passed down because, again, it needed to be there at some point for good
Right.
reason. For our parents or their parents or their, you know, down the line. But then having that within us in the present. So that's where I love IFS and where it acknowledges these legacy burdens and these
Yes.
ancestral burdens, because so much of what we're carrying in the present, a huge percentage of that might not make sense
Yeah,
because
or it
it's
might not be
not,
ours to carry.
that's right, because it's not ours. It's not ours to carry, but maybe it was part of, like you were saying, your mom's story
Right, exactly.
and her experience.
Another note that I made is I said most of these adults didn't have a voice and were stripped of their power. So being a parent was oftentimes the first chance that any of them had as a sense of power and control. And if they're still feeling the effects of being powerless, their parenting style is going to reflect that. And that my needs, my wants, my feelings, or existence didn't matter if it intersected with what my caregivers or other adults felt was important. And oftentimes I heard, you know, I'm the parent, you're the child, kids are to be seen, not heard. In response to valid and reasonable concerns that probably felt like challenges, which were then interpreted as threats to their authority or their power.
Right.
And that's damaging, especially for a child who's curious and inquisitive and just, wants to learn. And, if that's stifled in those moments, you start to have some parts to come in and say, okay, well, we can't do that again. We can't do this again. And
That's
if that
right.
happens when you're five, and you're living with that, and now you're, 50, you're gonna have a lot of deficiencies.
That's right. And at the time when we're with our caregivers as a child, we're vulnerable in the sense that we are reliant on our caregivers' self-energy and in the sense of how we need to act or be in order to feel safe. And so, yeah, it's we adapt. We adapt as kids and we're great adapters and we survive. And like you were saying, it's all that stuff is needed then in those past moments. But then as we keep getting older and getting older, if we're still engaging in those same protector energies and still have those wounded parts within us being triggered with those burdens, it doesn't make sense at some point in our life. And I feel, would you say that was there a moment for you in your healing work, either like with your IFS therapist or just when you're in your writings where, because I guess I have found in my personal parts work where I have let my system, like my protector parts see, and even my younger parts see that I'm not that age anymore, that I give them like an update in terms of this is where I live now, this is what I do, that I mean can be this moment for the especially those protector parts to be like, oh, so you're not that 5-year-old. And I'm curious, yeah, was there, how do you feel like that updating has helped some of your
So I think
parts?
the biggest thing for me was letting my parts know that it is okay to have a voice. It is okay to disagree, right? Because I learned early on that it wasn't safe to disagree, or it wasn't safe to have autonomy, or to, express your feelings if they weren't the same as your caregivers. And I get a huge activation now when I have to express myself to someone who was part of my rearing or has their own strong opinions. It's difficult for me to say, well, no, that's not right, because I'm challenging authority. And authority for me is so broad and so vast, because the dynamic of, cultural authority for me, just, there's so many layers to that. But I would always just stay quiet, even if I knew something was wrong. Like, you listen to somebody and you're just like, but you wouldn't express yourself, or you wouldn't speak up, because if you did, you were now telling someone else that they weren't good in their role as being, a caregiver or an authority figure. And I grew up not challenging authority, period. So now, especially that I have all of this knowledge that I've gained through therapy and reading and studying, I can tell someone, no, that's not right, and this is why. So it's not me saying it's wrong, I'm showing you why it's wrong. And I think that has allowed my system to have a lot of relief, because I can back the things up that I'm saying with people who have PhDs and, all types of other degrees. I can say, listen to my episode with Dr. Porges. That's big for me.
And I just had kind of this image in my mind of it's like you're holding the acknowledgement of the experience of our parents and what they went through, and also that acknowledgement of what you went through in your individual experience. And I guess I don't know how to word this, I guess, in terms of what I'm noticing, but it's like this marrying together of both the ancestral story and that understanding of why, some of these ways of being have been been present because that was for survival,
Right.
and how that has been passed down, like you were talking, like through epigenetics. And then to also, it's like having like in the present that awareness of, okay, I can understand now from this survival and stress ancestral standpoint, some connections there. And then also having this awareness of our individual parts that are connected to our direct experience. And I guess I don't know if I'm wording this in a way that makes sense, but that's, I guess, something that I just really appreciate about this work is that it's holding all of it in our awareness, because all of it together, it like starts to make sense and we can turn towards it with compassion. And that we're not saying, oh, our parents are bad people. 'Cause I do really, another thing that I appreciate about IFS is that it's very much a message of, you know, we're not putting moral meaning on someone, meaning like we're not saying like you are a bad person, but it's, hey, maybe you did something in a way that wasn't that impactful. But I can see where historically for the person and even ancestrally, like it made sense. But also to know it's okay to acknowledge, like you've been saying, our caregivers have done the best that they could with what they had. And there were some mistakes.
Two things can coexist at once. Yes.
Exactly.
And cycle breaking, I think, is what we could use as a term to kind of bring all this together. And that's difficult to be the first person to want to change something that could be cultural. It's like trying to cancel Christmas, Like no one is happy with having to change the way they've operated for years. And then having, I always think of if I go to my mom and I say, "You did a good job, but you have to change everything because who you are and how you've been no longer works." The first thing she's going to do is get defensive. Because how are you going to tell me that, what I'm doing or the way that I've been taking care of you isn't good? Because that's what I think that she would hear if I said that. So it's difficult to try to bring healing into dysfunction, because dysfunction may not even be something that they're aware of is happening. It's just
Right.
we're doing the best that we can, and now you're telling me I'm a bad parent. No, I'm saying that you did an amazing job with, what you had, but let's discuss how we can bring some other ways of being and operating into the conversation. And
Right.
that's difficult to do. It's very difficult to do.
Yeah. And that's where, yeah, again, I really appreciate the not putting moral meaning on the person in terms of their behaviors, that, you know, we're not shaming someone doesn't do anything beneficial, really, because that's saying that they're bad, right? And then that's just going to really activate protector parts and a bunch of triggerings everywhere. So, yeah, it really is this, like you just said, kind of that balance of maybe I love you and you did the best that you could with what you had, and I appreciate you. And maybe here are some things that, you know, I've noticed within myself that I wanted to share with you. Yeah. And then again, right? It's like we're not in control of other people's systems within, in terms of what parts of them get activated and what parts step in front that maybe, yeah, get defensive. And we can, the way I look at it now is when I am communicating with someone, and it's like you're noticing, of course, like I'm noticing what's getting activated within myself. So I feel like I can be as self-led as possible in that conversation. And then also having that, I feel like when we can start seeing things in terms of parts, it really helps just be in that compassionate energy with that other person who's maybe getting blended and triggered with their protector parts, so that then me as the other part of that conversation, my system's not getting, is not taking over with my protective energy then too, because parts of me are getting frustrated or or whatnot. It's like that frustration could still be there, but can I be present with this person as they're maybe in a blended state with that calm, understanding presence?
Do you have a difficult time introducing IFS to someone who knows nothing about it? Because I'm listening to you and I completely understand when you say blended and, all these other terms that are specific to IFS. But when you have like a new client, is there like an IFS intake that you do in order to allow them to understand it? Or is it just, you go slow and they understand as you go?
It's a good question. I feel like I'll just speak to, I guess, like the average situation I feel like that I get is if someone comes to me knowing nothing about IFS, then that's where I'll naturally just start using that language. And then if the person's like, okay, so what does that mean? Then we'll have that conversation. And then there's some resources that like I'll typically ask them like, are you familiar with IFS? Yes, no, maybe. And if they are, like, that's great. Is there anything, any questions you have for me? Or if they're like, no, I know nothing, then I don't know. It just kind of is a case by case thing. I don't want to say
Gotcha.
that I do the same thing with each person. I don't have yet like an IFS intake type thing or anything like that. It's kind of just, I just go with it and I see what the person maybe is needing because sometimes they have really curious, like learner parts that are like, oh, tell me more about IFS. And they want to have like recommendations for certain books and things like that. And then I'm like, yeah, let me send you all these amazing resources that I know of that talk about IFS. And then there's some people that I work with that they don't necessarily need those things. They're just going with it.
For me, I didn't necessarily grasp the concept of internal family systems right away. I remember, like, after a couple of sessions, I was just, sitting thinking, and I go, oh, just like you have an external family, internal family system. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I got it. And I was like, wow. And then, Richard gives the example in his book of like when you look under a microscope and you see all those parts that you can't see if you're just looking at something. But once you get close, you can see everything moving and working on the inside and how it's just, an entire ecosystem.
Right.
And once we understand that that's what we have internally, we can start to get to know it and break it down and see who's big and who's maybe back in the corner, exiled and things of that nature.
Yeah. I love that analogy. I also use the one with the birds. Have you heard of that one? Where I think it's like sparrows that they fly in like that pretty tight blob. And if you squint and you look up in the sky, it's like it looks like one solid blob if you squint and they're all moving together. But if you look really closely, you realize that
That's a
they're
good one.
individual birds. And
That's a
so
good one.
yeah,
That's a really good
I like those
one.
both. Well, I wanted, as we come to a close in our conversation, I wanted to ask you, what do you want the listeners to know in terms of maybe for someone who's listening to this and they're in the midst of their healing journey? I guess, is there anything you want to share with that individual and or with someone who's listening to this and they're hesitant to even start their healing journey?
I understand. I would say first and foremost, because, not being a therapist, I know what it's like to be petrified to talk to someone or to even have to feel what's going on internally, I realized that, I had so many ways of avoiding feeling my feelings. I had become a professional feelings avoider, but it wasn't doing me any good. So if you're in the middle of your healing journey and it gets hard or it feels too big, acknowledge that, but don't stop. And if you're just starting, it's going to be very difficult, probably one of the most difficult things you've ever had to do. But it's also one of the most important things that you could do because you allow yourself to get to a place of such internal harmony and peace that it's second to none.
Beautiful. Thank you for that.
Okay.
And so, how can people get in contact with you and your podcast? We haven't even said what it's called.
Well, the podcast is called Not Your Ordinary Parts. And that is kind of a play on words from Internal Family Systems. I remember when I saw Richard's book, No Bad Parts, I said, oh my goodness, I need to attach myself to this somehow because I'm in love with IFS, but I want to be a little different, and have some originality. And I was just coming up with name after name after name. And it just hit me, Not Your Ordinary Parts, because I do feel that I'm a little different in the sense that I'm a man, number one, who's talking about his feelings and being vulnerable. On top of that, I'm a black man who's doing that, which culturally, that's not something that you see every day. It's happening more and more now, which is great, but there's still a huge community of black men that are just terrified of talking about their feelings. So for me, I felt like what I was doing wasn't ordinary. And I'm a huge fan of IFS, so Not Your Ordinary Parts.
I love it. And where can people find that?
YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on Instagram.
Yeah. And what is your Instagram?
My personal Instagram is at London's Pop. My son's name is London, so at London's Pop. And the podcast is at Not Your Ordinary Parts.
And I'll put all of those in the show notes so people can have that. Well, Jalan, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. And I'm just so grateful that I know you.
Likewise, thank you for having me, and I'm excited to interview you coming up too, soon too. So,
I'm excited for that as well. Thank you all so much for joining me today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast, give it a rating, and leave a review. You can also follow me on Instagram at Natalie Deering. And sign up for my newsletter on my website, ndwellnessservices.com, to receive updates about podcast episodes, workshops, and more.